Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, before we begin the next interview, I just want to warn you that the following discussion might not be suitable for a younger audience, and some listeners may find the content distressing. 42-year-old Mark Jackson was last week sentenced to 5 years in prison at Naas Circuit Court for coercive control after subjecting his former partner, Louise Jackson, to a series of intimidating and violent behaviours over a 9-year period. The judge also took into account charges of assault, threatening to kill, and criminal damage. Now, Louise decided to waive her anonymity in order to share her story and to help others in similar situations. And yesterday she joined me here in the studio. We were also joined by Stephen Breen, crime editor with the Irish Sun. And I began by asking Stephen to tell me about the case and Mark Jackson's guilty plea before the trial began.
Yeah, after he was charged with these offences, the trial was due to go ahead. And up until just a few days before the trial was due to commence, he entered a guilty plea. So it meant that when Louise was going to court, the only issue that they would deal with that day would be the sentencing. For Mark Jackson, it also meant that Louise wouldn't be cross-examined, or she wouldn't be have to go before the judge there and outline and try to prove to a jury as to why, you know, she was taking this case and as to why Mark Jackson should be placed in prison for these terrible offences.
Mm-hmm. And what about his demeanour in court? As somebody who has watched these cases and covered these types of cases for years, how do you assess Mark Jackson?
I think when he sat there listening to Louise's victim impact statement, it was a very powerful victim impact statement. It went into great detail in relation to the abuse that she had suffered over many years. He sat with his head bowed. He showed very little emotion, and his only engagement with the court was when he was talking to his barrister. And at the end of the court process, the barrister had said to the court that there was a letter of apology, and he had indicated how he was showing, you know, apologetic views, and that he was showing signs that he was regretful for the actions that he did. But that was the only mitigation that was placed before the court. But other than that, he was just very subdued, and I would suggest embarrassed, you know, because these horrific details were being outlaid and being said to the whole court.
Now, he presented that letter of apology, we know, but the judge, Martin Nolan, he had stern words for Mark Jackson in handing down the sentence and in summing up the case.
Absolutely. Judge Martin Nolan described the abuse as disgraceful. He said that Mark Jackson had a controlling mentality, and he seemed to enjoy and benefit from the misery that he was causing Louise. And also that it was important to note that Judge Martin Nolan said that Louise was sincere in her victim impact statement, was sincere in her evidence which she had given before the court, and she had been through a hellish time. And at the end of it, that's why he said the appropriate sentence in this case was a 5-year sentence.
Okay, Stephen, you're going to stay with us on the line, but I am, as I said, joined in the studio by Louise Jackson. Louise, it's good to have you here. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Can we go back to when you first met Mark Jackson? Was that 2010?
It was, yeah, 2010.
And where did you meet? How did that happen?
We just met in a pub, just hit it off in a pub.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you did hit it off from the get-go, did you?
Yeah, it was a whirlwind romance. I was pretty very much swept off my feet, and it moved in a very fast pace. You know, we were engaged and living together within a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. And did you feel happy in those early days?
I did. I felt very happy. I felt I'd never met anyone like him. I realise now, looking back, and because I was linked in with services, like, I never heard of love bombing or, you know, things like that, and mirroring what you want to see. So, yeah, it was the perfect relationship.
Yeah, well, that's what we hear about coercive control.
Yeah.
That's how it starts, that everything is almost too good to be true. It's like a fairy tale, which is kind of what you're describing there.
Yeah, and I was very much in love with him, and I did see a future together. And I suppose that's how it's so shocking when the abuse starts. You're so dumbfounded and shocked by not only the degrading and the shame that comes with the abuse. It's why they do this. They do the most horrific, degrading forms of abuse, knowing you will not tell anyone.
Mm-hmm. When did it start then?
It started about 6 or 7 months into the relationship, just very small things, you know, creeping in, possessiveness, controlling where I went, not happy with me, like taking pride in myself, showing up at my job. Just very small things creeped in. But over time, I just got wore down, like very, very quickly. The physical abuse would have started in, well, the one that stands out the most to me would have started in on my pregnancy of our first child together.
Mm-hmm. So when you were pregnant, you were being physically abused?
Yes. And I was actually, my child I had before that pregnancy, he died a couple of hours after birth. So I was already in a very anxious and stressful state because I was terrified going through the pregnancy. And, you know, one thing that stands out is I was attending a premature clinic in the Rotunda Hospital, and it was early stages of pregnancy because I was high risk. And I had to have like a vaginal scan. He was present in the room and his demeanour changed in that room. He became abusive in the room, and then he dragged me out of hospital, mm-hmm. calling me vulgar names because a male doctor
was examining you. And he didn't want you to be seen by any male medics?
No, never.
And cancelled appointments, did he? Made you cancel appointments?
Yeah.
Just going back to what you said there about your appearance. So he didn't want you looking well or taking pride?
You know, it used to be like, if, for example, if we went into a garage or anywhere, I used to walk with my head down. If someone said politely, like customer service, you know, nice weather, I couldn't answer them back because I'd be interrogated for hours. And that just, it just took over. It got to the stage where I was reluctant to leave the house at all.
So you completely, it sounds like you completely changed as a person.
I completely changed. I moulded into a quiet shell of myself that was withdrawn and in constant need of his approval. I would light up inside if he said something nice to me, only to be broken down again in the same conversation. So it was very confusing. You're in a state of confusion. You start to question yourself. And, you know, there was a time I felt like I deserved a lot of the abuse and I felt sorry for him. So that's how twisted the mind gets.
That is part of it, though, isn't it?
Yes.
That you will believe that this is happening because it's your fault.
Exactly.
That's what you're told day in, day out. Yeah. Did any of your family notice that you were changing?
No, like we hid it, both of us, very well. And, you know, I was rearing a very young family, so, and they were very close in age. So me not wanting to go to things or...
You could hide it.
It was, you know, I'm a young mum with a large family. You know, I don't want to go to these things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he didn't want you seeing your family, did he?
No, he wanted me isolated completely.
And friends?
I have no friends.
Mm-hmm. So he stopped any contact with anyone else apart from him and your children.
Yeah. And I couldn't speak about my past and the people in it. And nor could I speak of my future and about what I wanted. So I was just stuck in this sense of, just stuck with him.
Do you want to talk to us about the types of things that he did? And it's entirely up to you if you want
to
do that.
Well, I'm very conscious that, it's been a very traumatic few days. And I am speaking from a place of trauma, hurt, pain. And I'm very conscious, you know, that the message I give across today, I want it to be of hope. Like, we've all read what he's done to me, and I can go into detail of that if you like. Mm-hmm. But
only with what you're comfortable saying. But I think for people to get a sense of what you have been through and what he did to you, it's almost helpful for us to know in a way. I mean, you told us there that you were beaten when you were pregnant.
Yeah.
That's the incident for you crossed
like
a line.
Publicly dragged out of a hospital, getting called names because, you know, and you go into shock. You're like, you know, you can't believe this has happened. Like, it's so shocking. I mean, for instance, there's, you know, it's out in the media. Also, the time about my eyelash extension. So I literally was a few minutes late back from an appointment, and he held a kettle of boiling water over me and told me if I moved, he would pour it over me while he pulled out my eyelash extensions.
Mm-hmm. All meant to demean and debase and degrade you.
Yeah, and it was the threat of violence. Even though the violence wasn't constant, it was the threat of violence. You lived in that state of fear. So over time, I wanted to stay alive for my children. And I just thought, if I just live by his rules, at least my children will have their mother.
Yeah. Did you feel like I've made a choice to be with him, so I have to put up with this?
Cause no, I didn't know how to get out.
Yeah, but that isn't that the thinking? You know, I have these children with him. I've made a decision to be with him.
If I leave, he's going to kill me.
Yeah.
So my children are left.
And that's why when people say, well, why didn't you leave? That's why you can't leave, because, yeah, you know, you're trying to protect your children.
And it's such a awful, you know, and that's why I'm here today, because we need to raise awareness for the stigma and shame. Like, society really needs to change their mindset on that. And, you know, stop asking the question, why didn't you leave? Start asking the question, why did he do this?
Yeah.
Why do we have people in our society that think it's okay to treat women this way?
Did you have any money? Did you have a phone?
I had, like, he controlled all the money, and, you know, I got whatever I was given, and if I played by his rules, I got more, basically. But, like, there was times, like, we weren't short of money, but I never physically had anything, only what he gave me. But, for example, like, we could go and get 2 trolley fulls of shopping, and that was like a big treat. And then there were days he'd go off out to work and I'd be left there with no milk. I smoked at the time, no cigarettes. And he would send me pictures of cigarettes, and as if to say, now, look, this is what happens when you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds, but I'm just trying to show the bizarreness.
It's torture. It's torture
and
every
I'm
day
with
of your
his
life.
Children. And another thing as well, like, when we speak of coercive control and isolation, like, it's all just kind of aimed at that the woman is isolated. If I'm isolated, my children are isolated with me. So this has a big impact on children also, because I didn't go outside the door. So my children didn't go outside the door.
You said they were very young at the time. Do you think they had a sense of what was going on?
I do. I mean, it's very hard to admit that as their mother. You know, you at the time when you're in it, you think, like, I had this routine of getting my children to bed really early, and it looked like I was a real organised mum. I got my children to bed early so they wouldn't hear what was going to happen, because I never knew which Mark was coming home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it very much impacts children.
When did you decide, I can no longer be here, I have to get out?
It was a kind of light bulb moment, if that's what you'd call it. It was when the day my daughter was born in 2017, I knew, but I just couldn't get out.
This was your youngest?
Yeah.
Do you want to tell me about that?
So I gave birth to my daughter, and a male porter wheeled me back to the hospital bed, and it was late at night. And he automatically, I would know, I could see it in his face and his eyes when he'd change. He became very abusive to me and to the porter. He was threatening me after, like, a couple of hours maybe after giving birth, that if I sleep with him, he would kill me. He ended up being removed from the hospital, and the security came up to me, and I had to be brought, and like, we had a chat about his behaviour, and he said, we're going to have to call the guards. And I remember sitting on the bed holding my daughter and looking at her and thinking, oh my God, like, my daughter's going to grow up thinking that this kind of behaviour is acceptable. And it was the first time, and I'm ashamed to say this, that it dawned on me that my sons are going to grow up thinking it's okay to treat women like this. And that night, I knew I had to go. And I did try a few times.
My heart is breaking for you, because that should have been one of the happiest...
Yes.
Nights of your life. And in a way, wasn't it a great turning point though?
It was, Louise? It was a major turning point, but like, I owned nothing, you know, like, I often tried to leave and he'd rip the clothes off my back, he'd smash my phone, he'd break the internet, he threatened to kill me, threatened to kill himself, and just threatened to expose stuff that I told him, private stuff about my past. And I just felt that, like, there's no way out from this.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get out?
On the 12th of October, it was a particularly bad assault. I rang the guards that night. That was the first time I rang the guards. And that night he interrogated me for hours. He dragged me by the hair to our back garden, and he kicked the back of my legs and my back. He kicked me over and over. And this was only like a couple of months after my mum had died. And I actually had a little thing with a lock of her hair in it, and I was holding it, and I was actually just begging that my kids wouldn't find me that night.
You thought he was going to kill you?
Yeah, on a few occasions, but that night I really thought, this is it now, this is it. Mm-hmm. And then he brought me back in, interrogated me again for hours, and then he just lost control completely, and he ran at me with a sweeping brush and caught me in the face. And I managed to get to a phone. I made the call. He actually came into the room while I was on the phone and wrestled the phone from me. But the guards did show up.
Just in those moments after he grabbed the phone off you, did he settle down again?
No.
Did he continue to hit you? Or?
Yeah. And, you know, like, because I'd contacted the guards, like, he was manic. I just was hoping they would arrive, and they did. Mm-hmm. And then that was the 12th of October. So that was the first time I'd reached out to the guards or my family found out. On the 15th of October, I got an interim barren order. And that was actually my son's anniversary that day.
Right.
So I stood in court physically, mentally, emotionally destroyed. And I just felt that day, because I didn't get to my son's grave that day, I will never go back. That was my journey then, started through the legal system.
Were you able to go back to the house then?
I did go back to the house, but it was all in his name, and I had to change stuff around, and he kept showing up at the house. He started breaching the order almost instantly. So then I was going in and out of women's refuge centres. I ended up that I left that house. I actually couldn't. It was like the House of Horrors. Like, every time I walked in, I couldn't even live in the house. So we went into Women's Refuge, and they were going to help us rebuild our life and, you know, get out and start a new life.
They must have been really tough years.
Very tough years. Like, I mean, I was just as much isolated as when I left as I was when I was with him. Because he went on to breach my barren order 30 times. And each one of them was more trauma for me, my children. We were put into women's aid refuge centres, and he was allowed walk free, even though it said on a legal document, if it was breached, he should be locked up for 6 months. And I was very conscious at the time when I'd be in refuge after these breaches. Like, I was taking up vital space that's needed for women that are making that call for the first time. And if the system implemented what is on in legal documents, I shouldn't have had to be there. And that broke my heart, like, knowing that I'm taking up space for women that could be fleeing for the first time.
Yeah, but you did really need to be there.
I did. My life was in danger. I was often took by Garda and Tulsa to refuge centres.
Mm. How did you stick with that whole process?
I don't know.
To bring it to this point?
I honestly don't know. But something in me just kept saying, report everything, report everything, report everything. And I did. And I needed to stay alive.
Yeah.
Like, my children and I deserve a really good future. And that's what my focus is on now.
Mm-hmm. And I know it's upsetting for you to tell what you've told me today, but you got to that point where he was convicted and he was sent to jail. What was that like, that day in court?
It's a bit of a day. It's that day. Like, I think I was in shock for, you know, a couple of hours. I mean, it's great to get the conviction, and the detective on my case, Detective Garda Louise Long, and the team in Nace, like, they were absolutely amazing. But it's been a very, very long journey to get to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when there's children involved, there are no winners. You're not jumping up and down celebrating. It's not that type of, you know, it's not that type of thing. You're just focusing now on how we are going to heal as a family and go on and try and have a normal life.
Yeah, but look what you've done for them. You know, it's huge. It's huge. And I'm thinking again of what you said when your youngest was born, that you didn't want her to grow up with this, and you didn't want your boys.
Yeah, so
to
it wasn't for even, I wasn't even leaving, trying to leave for myself. I was too caught up. It was the children. That was what gave me, for my children. I have to get out of this situation for my children. And you know, it is hard for me as a mother to say that my children have witnessed horrific things. But when you're caught in that situation, like, there are services out there that will help you to get out of it, you know, and the children are very much impacted.
Mm-hmm. And look, it's not going to, you're not going to get over this today or tomorrow
no.
or in 6 months' time, and nor are they.
No.
You're on a road here. And how would you say everyone is doing?
I'd say my children are doing really well. They're thriving in school. So everything has settled down. He was sent to prison in December 2021 for an assault on me and 9 breaches of a barren order. So we've had that sense of peace since then. And we've all thrived and come on so much in that time. Mm-hmm. I had to make a decision, you know, obviously with guidance. My children were very confused and obviously they remember stuff. And he kind of went behind this story of he's working away. So I made the decision to tell my children in a child friendly manner where he is. There are no secrets in their home. They're young enough now that I can and I have picked them up and held them in my arms and I'm able to comfort them and we're going through this together. Because I was very nervous looking forward to that, them finding this out in a few years time when they're at a vulnerable age, teenagers rebelling anyway. That now is the time for us to have everything in the open and to get the services and the support we need to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And, it, you know, it's not an easy conversation to have with young children, but like that, all this shame, stigma, it has to end. People need to start having real open conversations about this. I think it's even vital that there's education in schools for red flags in relationships, because I didn't know any of them. I didn't know there was emotional abuse, financial abuse, you know, all these things that are part of coercive control.
Yeah, that big decision that you made to come out and say, I am Louise and this is my story, to go public on this.
Yeah.
I know that you've something to say about that, Louise,
yeah.
The reason why you did it.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, you've written something down.
Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead and tell us what that is?
Yeah. So the reason I requested to waive my anonymity is because I want to raise awareness for coercive control, domestic violence, and my journey through the justice system and the impact that this has on women and children. And what can hopefully be done to make this process somewhat easier. I know my story is raw and full of emotion and even frustration, but sadly it's a true reflection of my experience. My intention is not to cast blame or point fingers at the justice system. It's simply to hold out my hand and say I can help. My journey can help if anyone is willing to listen or take my hand. And open up real discussions in all sections to help the women and children sadly coming behind me on this same path, so the path that they are on is somewhat smoother and the obstacles they face are smaller. I want to be able to confidently say to any woman, it's going to be a long journey when you leave, but the destination is worth it. And hopefully there are smoother systems in place to support this. I am a mother and I have learned from my own mistakes and bad decisions in life. But it's my role now to teach my children right from wrong and healthy social norms. And the only way I can do that is to be totally honest with myself and the journey I have been on by showing them I'm not afraid to share my experiences to grow and help others. But most importantly, I'm doing this for myself. This was a very long journey to make, but I stand with my head held high because I am not a victim anymore. It's been a very lonely, sad and scary journey, but it can't have been for nothing. I want my voice that was taken away from me for so long to be heard again. I am not defined by coercive control and domestic violence. I have experienced coercive control and domestic violence, and I am willing to try move on and heal. It will not define me or my future, but it's part of who I am now. I can't look back in 10 years and say, why didn't I speak out in 2023, knowing that women and children are still suffering.
Louise, thanks so much. That in itself is powerful, but you are powerful. And I think anyone who is listening to that today, just be so amazed at what you did, because you were at home there with 4 children, and to make the decision that you did to leave that home where terrible things were happening. But what did the future hold? You go out and you go to a women's refuge. It's not where anybody would want to be.
No.
So to take that decision is hugely brave.
Thank you.
Louise, I wish you all the very best with the years ahead. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks so much for having me here today.
And if anyone is affected by anything you've heard this morning, you can contact Women's Aid. We've mentioned that organisation so many times. The number is 1800 341 900. That's 1800 341 900. Or Men's Aid 01 554 3811. 01 554 3811. And there's information and support as well on rte.ie/support.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.